I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Listening to Awake Radio, straight talk for the awake and aware.
Get ready to shake and wake to the truth. This is an all-points bulletin. Be on the lookout for the couple known as Rick and Annie.
They are armed with the truth and considered extreme and dangerous.
Shake and wake to the truth with Rick and Annie. Weekdays, Monday through Friday in the USA. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific. 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. GMT in the UK. Be on the lookout for the couple known as Rick and Annie, appearing at any time on multiple affiliate networks. Catch them in the app live or rebroadcast. See if you can catch them on awakeradio.us. and awakeradio.co.uk or any of their known affiliates, spreading the truth to set you free. The couple known as Rick and Annie have been known to ride with Wild Bill Samsel's notorious Freedom Posse. Armed with the truth, considered extreme and dangerous. For more information on the suspects, visit shakeandwakeradio.com.
Deal with it.
You deal with it.
That's right. Just deal with it. You live in the twilight zone, ladies and gentlemen. So stick down your pipe and smoke it.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it.
We have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
There's a need for a new world order.
They believe that we're going to go to the concentration camp and they're going to give our army to Russia and all that baloney.
The issue is, we live in an interdependent world. We have to cooperate with people. We're better off than we do. we're better off with NATO. We're better off with the United Nations.
You were both in Skull and Bone, the secret society. It's so secret we can't talk about it. What does that mean for America?
Creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
A world order that I think all of us would like to see.
A world order that I think all of us would like to see. To see. To see.
Guys and gals, here we go yet again. It is Monday morning.
That was a Fleetwood Mac song, Monday morning.
Oh yeah, that's right. Monday morning, you sure look fine.
I should get that song.
Yeah. Wow, man. I don't know what day it is anymore.
Monday. Guess what almost happened to me, folks? When I let the chickens out, I heard a snapping noise.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I am 2 inches of almost having a nice big-sized branch falling on my head.
Oh,
so I took
wow.
it and tossed it in the woods.
Wow.
Good morning.
We had some storms yesterday. I don't know what it is, but every time Bill Samsel's show is going to come on, we have thunder and lightning going off. So it's not bad enough that I'm producing my best friend, and if I make a mistake, I'm going to screw his show all up. But I got to sit there while the thunder and lightning's raging, wondering if we're going to get knocked offline. I see you got your coffee IV, and you're all set to go. Plenty of duct tape.
Yeah, plenty of duct tape. I got some for your mouth if you're going to be wise.
All right, we won't go there.
No, we won't.
Our guest today is the one and only. Well, just play the intro. Everyone will know who it is.
Holy.
Got the best name. His name is so much fun. I love your name, Ole.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
If you don't know who this guy is, you obviously haven't been in the Patriot Freedom
You've been living
too
under
long.
A rock.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot,
guys. I couldn't
guy.
Believe it. When we first came here, right, we're listening to a show. We're listening to the different hosts there, right? And all of a sudden, I heard your voice. I'm like, that's Ole.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's a host on this network. And
Steve made the joke.
Captain Steve, the founder, said Ole's got more time on air here than you and Annie do. But I think we're gaining on you now.
Yeah, we
doing
are.
7 days a week.
So, I hope so.
So, how are things going? And, well, are you still in Bilderberg, or that's done now, right?
Oh, it's done now. I'm back in Spain, and I just want to thank you for being so alert and so ready to go and help me with this warning, because I really think that we might have defused a possible massacre, I tell you. I don't know if you want to, maybe some of your listeners haven't heard what happened.
Yeah, if you want, recap the story of when you first got there the day before, what it was like.
Okay, yeah, for sure. No, for the those listeners who don't know about me, my name is Ole Damegård. I'm really just like a normal guy, but for about 30 years I've been dedicating a major part of my life trying to reveal the truth behind many of the major conspiracies like the JFK, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, 9/11, Oklahoma City, the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, and so many more. And one of the things that I've also written several books in this.
Yeah, why don't you give out some of your book titles and your website address and stuff? And
no, my website is lightonconspiracies.com, lightonconspiracies.com. And one of my books is called Coup d'etat in slow motion. That's Coup d'etat in slow motion. It's about the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, but with all the links going involving the Iran-Contras, even way back to the JFK assassination and so on, because it turns out that the same power elite that took out JFK and, in my humble opinion, have stayed in power ever since, I mean, it's just different faces of the same brutal war machine that is still in power, and they've even used the same team of assassins to a great extent, so the same people that were taking part of the assassination at Dealey Plaza were actually, some of them were in Stockholm 23 years later taking out the Swedish Prime Minister, and they were also part in the killing of Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Che Guevara, Salvador Allende, Robert Smith in South Africa, Uwe Barton in Germany, and so they've been very, very active. So one of the things I focused on is trying to reveal who are behind all of these things, and one of the groups in the power pyramid, not in the absolute top but way up there, is the so-called Bilderberg Group. And it was a group created in 1954 with Nazi roots, but also royal roots, and it was created in Hotel Bilderberg in Oosterbeek in Holland. And the whole idea for this group was that they wanted to centralize the power, the global power, to fewer and fewer people. So what they did was make up an agenda to start inviting key people from every single Western country. I mean, the thing is that with only a handful of people, you can more or less control a country like Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Belgium, Holland, and so on, that size. You only need like maybe around 10, 12 people if you've got control over the exact right key positions. We're talking in media, the legal system.
Right, all you got to do is show them the Zapruder film, right? Any questions?
No, not really. But anyway, so one of the
Did you hear what I was just what I said? I was kind of joking. I said you just show them the Zapruder film and ask them any questions. Okay. As far as controlling people.
Yeah, that is true. No, so what I and quite a few other researchers have been doing is spending years and years trying to reveal the agenda from these super secret meetings, because they have one meeting every year, at least one, and they keep changing location. So they very often meet in a hotel owned by one of the elite members in an isolated location where they can put total security surrounding it, and so that absolutely no normal person will have any idea what's going on, or even less being let in there. The press, no one is let in there. And like I said, this has been going on for like 60 years now. It's exactly 60 years, actually. It was on the date when they had the Bilderberg meeting, it was exactly the 60 years anniversary. And so...
Isn't it illegal for a sitting president to go to Bilderberg or be a part of an organization like that?
I would call it treason. I mean, they are meeting with foreign leaders, foreign military advisors, people in the legal system and the so-called intelligence world, you know, CIA, all of these different MI6, they're all there, including people like Google and the chief of the, what do you call it, director of Google and different search engines. They're all there at these meetings. And so
I remember when Barack Obama was running for president, him and Hillary disappeared for a little while. And
yeah. I tell you what happened there.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm not sure what happened there, but they did a real stunt there. They put the whole press on the Air Force One, I think it was, and then the plane took off, but without Barack Obama. And he and Hillary just shot off somewhere. I'm not sure where they went, but it was, as far as I remember, it was at the exact time and date of the Bilderberg meeting. So, well, your guess is as good as mine, but for sure they're super connected with this group. Anyway, so this year I was invited to Denmark as one of the key speakers there, not for the Bilderberg meeting itself, but for the people who are trying to reveal this whole thing. There's a whole truth movement that has been focusing on doing that. And last year, that was the first year they couldn't deny the existence of this Bilderberg group. It was held in Watford, just outside London. And so instead of trying to hide it, when they couldn't get away with it anymore, instead they went open and said, no, we have nothing to hide, please come here. And then they made like a fenced-in area for the protesters, about a kilometer from the hotel. So the whole area was totally controlled by police and
what's the point?
Yeah, but it's step by step. You know, we are revealing them step by step. It's the ship is going down around them, but they're
no. I mean, what I meant was, what is the point of protesting if you're not gonna be within earshot of the people you're trying to shout down?
I know.
That would be like, oh well, we're having World Trade meetings in a certain city, but we're gonna put you in the next city right next to it.
Exactly.
What's the point?
there is no point, and at the same time, the point is to expose them. So it doesn't really matter if they were inside that hotel or not. It's the awareness that comes around it. The more people that become aware of what's going on, the better it is. I mean,
they can
keep hiding in the shadows and crawl around in the darkness. The main thing is that we become awake, you know, that we wake up, put the spotlight on them saying, it's not okay what you're doing. It has to stop, you know, because
they're behind
so many atrocities to this beautiful world. I mean, it's unreal. It is absolutely unreal.
I heard a documentary that Steve was playing last night, and I think one day this week I'm going to play it on the air. When I said what's the point, I didn't mean what's the point of you trying to expose them in the protesters. I meant what's the point of, they won't let... If you're going to be protesting in front of a place, you should be able to stand in front of the place. And literally, if you had to, block the place so nobody could get in there. You know, I mean, to put you up the street in a fence where nobody's going to see you, I mean, that's what I meant when I said, what's the point? I wasn't being disrespectful. I know, Rick.
I didn't say that. But it is an actual joke when you look at it. I mean, it's like... But then again, it is a step-by-step awakening that is going on. So every step closer to them dissolving this whole thing, the better it is. And for people who don't know about the Bilderberg Group, they're like three major groups way up in the top of the pyramid. One is the Council on Foreign Relations, the other one is the Trilateral Commission, and the third one is the Bilderberg Group. And these... Many of the members in these groups are member in more than one. So, but these are sort of like hidden networks it's almost like a secret world government that are pulling the strings behind the scene.
For sure. And it is the hidden hand that you see so often, you know, that puppet master hand. They control the drugs, they control all the sex trafficking, everything. They are organized crime.
I think that is a very good description, organized crime, but with a beautiful cover, you know, a very sophisticated cover of decency and honesty and democracy, but behind the cover, absolute brutal criminality on a scale that is unreal. I mean, totally, it's mind-blowing once you get into what they're doing.
Yeah, we were watching TV the other night and we saw the Normandy D-Day Memorial Celebration on the beach where my grandfather was a tank captain. And they were showing this giant red carpet and this big, huge pavilion that they had set up right there on the beach. And these limousines were pulling up as people like Putin were getting out and walking with two little children down the red carpet as all these people applaud and all these different world dignitary leaders and then Barack Obama. And I just wanted to throw up. I really did, because all the blood that was shed on that beach on that day in the name of freedom, and it was all orchestrated within our own country and with the Pope and the Roman Catholic Church fencing the stolen gold. And I mean, here are the people who are supposed to be leading their countries and keeping their people safe, and they're the ones that are behind, you know, that are the puppets going along with the banksters, causing death and destruction all around. And they're acting like, oh, we're paying homage to the men who died on D-Day. It's disgusting.
It is. It is. It really is. When you see the power structure behind both world wars, the whole financial thing that were financing both sides in a very ice-cold way, you know, just firing under the whole conflict, trying to get as many countries involved as possible so that they could tie them down by lending them money for weapons when they really needed it, and then afterwards, you know, just strangling them with debt. That, I mean, many of these countries are still in such debt from these wars. It's incredible. And it's very, very distasteful what is going on. Anyway, so I went there. I flew in from Spain to Denmark. And the first thing when I arrived, I said, please, can we go to this hotel? Because there was such a strange thing about this hotel where they were supposed to meet. Because for one thing, it leaked out very early where they were going to meet. Normally, there's a lot of secrecy around the location, and we only find out in sort of like maybe a month ahead. But as far as I know, 2-3 months ago, most people knew it's going to be the Marriott Hotel in Copenhagen. That's it. So I started checking out this place a long time before I left Spain. And when you look at Google Map, the whole location is very, very odd, because normally protection and securing all parameters, that is one of the key factors that they're so aware of. You know, they use very skilled people and military advisors and so on. And so the normal deal with these hotels is often in a secluded place, like I said before, where they can control the entrance, exits with military and police and so on. Some of the members are flown in normally, otherwise they come in limos straight from the airport, but with very little possibility for the normal person to have any kind of look into what is going on. Then I come to this place, and it's in central Copenhagen, right in the middle of town, right by one of the main streets, with a big open water channel on behind the hotel, making it extremely difficult to protect from that side. If, I mean, half of Copenhagen can see the building, and if they fear like an attack with a Stinger missile or something like that, if they feared, what I mean, if there is such a thing as a real terrorist, because more or less all of the things come from as are inside jobs, according to my research during 30 years. But if they feared such an attack, this hotel would be so badly chosen. And also, right in front of the hotel, there's a big open space. It's a parking area, gravel road, gravel type of thing, where they fenced it in so that the Truth Movement could gather there, right in front of the hotel. The whole hotel has like glass. The whole hotel is like made. It looks like a glass, so you can look straight into the corridors and staircases and so on. So very, very bad for protection, I must say. And then around this whole gravel area, there were insurance companies, banks, high buildings, and then the police headquarters. And when I arrived there in the evening, the day before, I mean, normally you got like bomb-sniffing dogs, you got very armed protection around it, police, cars, all of these things, you know, protection, helicopters. When I arrived there, there were two Danish police officers doing zero. They were doing absolutely nothing, you know, not even interested in what was going on. I and a couple of other people were able to walk all the way up to the hotel, look into the windows. There were some people from InfoWars there behind the building, you know, that should have been secured a long time ago. And they were, when I arrived, they were just about to start building like a concrete little wall around the hotel, you know, with fence the whole thing in. But the whole thing, there was nothing that even looked anything like it normally is. So I started, I mean, since they're not, you know, like stupid people. Many of them are very intelligent. So why on earth would they choose a hotel like this? So I started looking around, you know, taking photos of the building around, just asking myself, why? Because when it comes to security, absolute crap place, I tell you. And then I thought, if they have made an intelligent choice for this hotel, then the object must be a different one. So option one, it can be a decoy, you know, because also right outside the entrance, they had put like six black limos, identical, polished, but no people. There were absolutely no people there. But it was almost like they were saying, we are in here, you know, you can see the cars, we always use these cars, so we are in here, you know. So I started looking around, and option one, like I said, decoy, you know, that they would maybe drive in some doubles into this hotel. You know, it's not difficult to, like Queen Beatrix, do her hairdo and stuff like that with a double, and then just get them in there. And then the group, the Bilderberg group, could then meet in a different location and be left alone. The whole Truth Movement would be under control by police and so on. So that was option one. But the more I looked around the area, I just felt, I got this eerie feeling that this was aimed to be something else. What I'm saying now, speculation, I do not know if this was planned. I'm just pointing out how perfect it would have been for a totally different scenario. And that scenario would be to get a few people in the hotel, you know, driving some doubles and whatever, get some limos in there so that the whole Truth Movement would gather in front of the hotel on this fenced-in area, so that they were expecting like 2,000-3,000 people. There were only a couple of hundred in total when I was there, but in the media they said 2,000-3,000 people. And once you start studying false flag operations, which I've done for so many years, and a false flag operation is it's a staged event. It's a job done from the inside to create a reaction from the public saying, oh my God, something needs to be done. And then I, who secretly created the problem, can push forward the solution. Okay? So we look at this area from a possible false flag operation view, because when I started looking around there, I saw, my God, they've actually got a possibility here to kick out the whole Truth Movement globally if they do it properly. You know,
and probably demo a hotel that maybe it's run down and not what it used to be, so they're going to collect some insurance money and blame it on the Patriot Freedom Movement.
this is one of the parts of the template. It's like you see the insurance just a week or two before something happens. Suddenly, by coincidence, it includes terror acts. You know, so I would very much like to look into what was going on with the insurance things before that. I checked out, the hotel looked a bit run down, I thought, you know, because often they have problem with asbestos in the basement or something like that, so they need, there will be a dear repaired, you know, a very expensive thing that they try to avoid, and then still blow it up, and then, just like you say, collect the insurance and make a bundle. But I was informed that this was built just a few years ago. I still think that there might be, if this was the plan, maybe there's some kind of construction problem or something like that. Foundation, you know, it's just by the water. Something like that, maybe that could explain why they chose this thing. But also when I looked around the area, the like I said, it was the buildings around it were all insurance companies and banks controlled by members of the same group. So actually with these buildings and then the police headquarters right in front of the hotel on the other side of this whole parking thing, you have a perfectly controlled area. I mean, like the name controlled demolition almost comes into mind, because you're controlling the whole area. So what the plan would be, if my suspicion is correct, would be to get like 2,000-3,000 of the truth movement inside this fenced-in area, controlled by the police, who are not aware of what's it's about to be pulled off. They just think they're there to secure, you know, and keep the peace in the street and so on. So you got 2,000-3,000 people in there. You get some doubles into the hotel, but generally speaking, the whole hotel is empty, but it's loaded with explosives inside. And then what you do is you place out different film teams, film crews. You got one down the street with a wide angle that can cover both the truth movement and the hotel from the side. You also got aerial coverage with helicopters, and you got people on from the other building. So you got all angles covered. What you then do is like you start stirring the energy. I mean, now we're talking to get a false flag operation going, because you need drama, you need smoke, you need scream. It's just like a film set. You need the drama to get right. The whole thing going.
That's where the provocateurs would come in. Go ahead.
Exactly, exactly. And this is where you before this whole thing, you place out smoke bombs, you place the in the area where the truth movement would be. You place the explosives inside the hotel, and then you send in provocateurs, just like you say. And these people, it's enough with only a handful, you know. What you do is you send them in there, and they will start shouting, screaming, you know, maybe starting a fight, throwing things, a lot
Molotov
of foul language.
Or something. Somebody lights a Molotov and throws it, you know.
There you go. There you go. Now you're studying the template. You're exactly. A Molotov, that's perfect, you know. And then, if that doesn't work, then you get people dressed in police uniforms to arrest somebody innocently. Many times these people that they arrest are part of the provocateurs as well. And then they drag this innocent guy right in front of the fence, right in front of the crowd. So the crowd would get really upset, you know, say, oh my God, let him go, he's totally innocent, don't hit him, these type of things. So you get the whole motion going. And then once the energy is stirred, once you have like Molotovs and all these things, suddenly, boom,
yeah,
out goes, the whole front of the building is blown out on top of the whole truth movement, yeah? But since the space is totally open in front of the hotel, you will have very little damages to other buildings. And like I said, the other buildings are yours anyway, so you collect insurance money on that. But what would then happen is, if we follow the template that they use normally, that all of these horrific images would be pumped out in media globally saying, oh my God, this truth movement, here they are saying they want a peaceful new world, you know, and they're trying to just expose what is going on, and they're accusing this poor, innocent, small elite group for horrible things, and look what they done. They massacred them. And then there would be a death list, you know, from inside the hotel. There would be maybe 12 names, most of them drivers, security people from the kitchen or something. Like maybe they would blow up a couple of old Bilderbergers that they could, you know, that they could get rid of anyway. You know, maybe they were troublemakers or something, just to give credibility. And then this whole thing would be pumped up and used to absolutely ban all rights to demonstrate, to gather in large groups, to protest, and also to use as a tool to censor the internet, you know, saying, oh my God, this whole truth movement, look what they've done, look what they've done. And internet is their tool. It is through the internet that they gather and they spread information, and this is the result. They massacre people. So in one blow, they could just hit the whole thing up globally. And I mean, these things, they're really trying, like here in Spain, they're trying to ban all rights to protest, demonstrate, and gather in groups and so on. So it would follow the template exactly. And do you know what happened the very next morning? I just want to add that when I came there, somebody had placed a six meter in diameter pentagram just in the middle of this area where the truth movement was about to gather. I mean, can you imagine the aerial photos of smoke and dead bodies and blown out hotel, and then a pentagram in the middle, and then bombarded out in the media globally? Can you imagine the reaction that would have been, the power of that? Unreal, absolutely unreal. So what I did was, I thought, I don't want to sound paranoid or be paranoid, so what I did was I contacted Chip Tatum, a guest you had on your show several times.
Yeah.
He's a former CIA operative, 25 years deep cover agent, black op assassin. He was part of Pegasus, which was a hit team controlled personally by George Bush Sr. that was sent on many, many assassinations globally, and he was
was a pilot who ran drugs and guns also
in the Iran-Contra thing. Yeah. Yeah, he was one of the major pilots there, so not an amateur. I mean, this guy has been part of these things, and he has also been part of other false flag operations. So I called him right away, said, I described the whole scene. He said there's something very weird going on here. He asked about the coverage on the water side. I said there was zero, absolute zero. He said normally they would have military vessels, maybe, you know, like rubber boats with soldiers, and then divers in the water. I said zero, absolute zero. So he said, get out from the area, and watch out for strange sounds, packages, you know, that could be with explosives, strange people, and so on. And I also called Jim Fetzer, who's a former Marine and who's been looking into many of these major conspiracies.
Yeah, we've had Professor Fetzer on many times, and to speak about all these different false flags. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So what I did, once I got it confirmed from the two of them that I was not just being paranoid, but there was actual, that it sounded very possible that this was what they were going to pull off, I spent the half night contacting radio shows like yours, and thank you so much for being so alert and helping to get this whole thing out, because it wasn't a matter of me being the one that knew beforehand, but it was a matter of how to stop this thing from happening, you know, how to get innocent people hurt, you know, defuse the whole situation.
Right. And if intelligence is listening to Patriot Radio, then by you coming forward and doing interviews, they might have heard it and reported back and said, hey, this Olay character is talking about it on all these different networks, so if we do this, we're going to get caught.
That was the whole intention, you know, so anyone listening in from whatever security, whatever, I'm very happy that you heard me, and thank God nothing happened. Because that was the whole idea. I went, you know, I went to on Winnie Eastwood's show in New Zealand. I went your show and several other in the States. Different countries in Europe, Canada, and so on. So it was out there globally. I got the radio host to record the date and time when this was revealed, so that it could be used afterwards, saying, if this happened, it was not the truth movement. It was an inside job, and we knew about it beforehand. So the whole thing was to aim the spotlight at them, saying, if you pull the trigger, We already know. We have sussed you out. Spotlight is on you, and so I'm very, very grateful to say that absolutely nothing happened. You know, the next day, I think they would have tried on Saturday when the most people were supposed to gather, but the whole thing got diffused and very few people turned up. I got criticized a little bit in Denmark for having scared people off, and I said that I'm very sorry if I caused you, if I scared you, not my intention, but what do you prefer?
Well,
to
Neil,
get a bit of ticklish feeling in the stomach or get your head blown off, you know?
Neil Foster, who's on after Alan Taylor Shear today, he's a great host of Reality Bites. He pretty much agreed with you. He doesn't think that they've been there the last 2 years. He thinks that it's just a decoy, or they possibly were going to do a false flag, and you likely you exposed it ahead of time.
I hope so. I have no idea if they were in there. It didn't really matter either, because like I think, you know, the most important thing is that they get exposed, so that because they can only pull this off when they're working in the shadows, when we're not aware of them. But now the spotlight is being more and more aimed at them, so it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah, what we're worried about in the States is another Bundy type scene, but this time there'll be provocateurs within the crowd who will shoot at federal land. Bureau of Land Management, you know, and then they'll parade family members and children who've got a dead daddy and bloody images, and make it out that, okay, there are more than 300 militia members who massacred these federal officers on the run now, and they could be in any state, so we're going to have to lock down the whole United States and search your houses to make sure that they're not in there. And while they're doing that, that would be a great time to do the roundups, don't you think, and take people's weapons?
Yeah, what you're describing is a very scary scenario, for sure. And once again, if this can come out beforehand, the more we talk about these things beforehand, the bigger the chance of defusing it. You know, that is also why I spent so much time on so many radio shows describing the different templates they're using, how to pull these false flag operations, so that to trick the population into thinking that it was the work of a lone crazy guy or a lone crazy group like the Truth Movement or the veterans or the homeless or you name it, so that they can blame the whole thing on that boogeyman and then pull forward with their own agenda. And the agenda is always the same. You will have to pay with your civil rights and your liberties and for more and more security,
Neil,
and surveillance.
Neil Foster, the host of Reality Bites, who's on today after Alan Taylor Shear, must have heard me talking about him, so he wants to join us and say hi to you.
Howdy. Hello.
Hi
Neil. Neil.
How are you doing? You were talking about Watford last year. I was there as well for the previous couple of weeks, liaising with the so-called liaison officers, who are pretty obviously intelligence officers. They were told not to talk to us after the event, even although we'd met some of them out of hours, as it were, giving them some information, and they were told to back off and never contacted us again. I had phone numbers of them and everything, and they were told to back off. Watford, we were all penned into what was in effect a compound for animals, basically, and that's how we were treated. Herded in, herded out, body searches, which didn't work. We had a couple of Sikh gentlemen with their ceremonial daggers who were allowed in, right in front of me. Well, they were behind me, but I let them go first because I thought it'd be quite interesting to see what the reaction they got. And they were allowed in with 8-inch blades. Everybody else was searched and things taken off them, you know, including cans of beer. I mean, but somebody can get him with a big dagger. Could have been a Muslim terrorist with a turban on.
But
yeah, you know, those cans of beer might have been explosives, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I thought about it afterwards, and I should have done something about it. But I don't know how they could differentiate between a Sikh and a Muslim. The only difference being that the guy had a turban on. But there was no evidence at all to suggest he was a Sikh. I mean, I don't know how they proved that.
No, but wouldn't you say the possibility is that they try to create these things when it's not just, you know, like what you start getting the whole energy going, but by how come he's allowed in and I'm not, you know, he's allowed, and then you start getting this conflict going within the group.
Yeah, well, I went in right after them and got the wand thing, and I wear silver chains and stuff, and nothing went off. So I just turned around to the rest of them and says, look, lads, if you want to smuggle anything in here, just make sure it's silver, because these things don't pick it up. And this, I mean, after that, the security boys just let me walk and come in and go, because I was in there all the time, because we had... were you there yourself last year?
No, I wasn't in Watford, no.
Nope. Ah, okay. Well, I mean, you know about the tent that was set up by the Guardian.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we had the only other tent that was in the place, which I'd organised with the police officers before that. We paid no attention to the circus on the Saturday, which was the Alex Jones and David Icke show. That's what it was.
The circus, I love it.
It was a circus, all it was. And myself, Mark Anderson of American Free Press, who I'm actually interviewing tomorrow, we sat in our tent, and it was the hottest day of the year. I think it was about 27, 28 degrees. And we sat inside this tent for the best part of 2 days, just doing live radio, and paid no attention to anything that was going on outside. We went out and did some interviews with some of the activists and some other people, but the whole thing's a farce. I don't believe for a second that's a genuine meeting. I think there's a few people sent through the doors in limousines to give the impression that that's where the meeting is, because there's supposed to be 140 people there plus all the security, etc., etc. But you're lucky if there was only 20 or 30 cars coming and going.
Right, and if Alex Jones and thousands of people weren't out there screaming, then they probably weren't there, right? I mean, come on. This would be the first time Alex Jones didn't show up, right?
Well,
as far as I know.
Yeah, well, I was, I had the, well, I now know, misfortune of being on...
I asked him, I said, you had the... pleasure of meeting Alex Jones. He said, I'd like to say I had the pleasure, but I won't.
Yeah. No, well, I was on his show back in 2010 because I'd managed to get into the Trilateral Commission meeting and confront David Rockefeller at his dinner table. So that got us on there. But so he knew who I was, and I introduced myself twice, and the man is just an ignorant pig, really. And I think definitely working for the other side. I don't mind saying that live on air. Him and David Icke together. No doubt about it.
Yeah, what follow the money and the organizations that they're connected with. But go ahead. Go ahead, Ole. Ole, Ed Opperman said to say hi to you. You know Ed Opperman, right?
Yeah.
World-renowned private investigator. He also said to ask you about Elvis. I said... Ole knows all about Elvis. He goes, I said, Ole knows the inside info on who delivered the wax dummy to Graceland. That's next week.
Elvis is over here working in a barber shop. Somewhere.
Thank God that's solved now. No, but it's so interesting what you said, Neil, about the number of vehicles, because there was very few vehicles this year as well. I just thought this is not on, because like you say, 140 people, normally there are only one or two in each of these vehicles, and then with the bodyguards behind them, there should have been vehicles non-stop. But until the whole first day, I mean, after the warning went out during the night, the next morning, very little security, I mean, ridiculously low, and then in the afternoon, it was almost like they started to come, and then I think on day two, suddenly, there was the whole protection, you know, military helicopters, snipers, NATO soldiers in the water, all of that were in place, so it was almost like they were somewhere else, and then this whole thing was, you know, they couldn't pull plan A off, so they went to plan B, and that was that they went to the hotel to almost have an alibi saying, no, but we were in there. I mean, this false flag would never have been. I don't know. I did not see one single person that I recognized. But well, I saw people in there, but...
Yeah, we went up to the Grove Hotel a couple of weeks before the event and spoke to some of the staff there. And we spoke to an American waitress, and she was just general chat about, you know, what was coming up and stuff. We didn't really mention Bilderberg, and just asking about the history of the place. And she said, oh, there was a famous song written about this place by an American guy. And then she went on to tell us that there were bat caves there. And I said, so was that Meatloaf then? And she said, yeah, that was the guy. So that whole album, Bat Out Hell, was written about the Grove Hotel.
And it just so happened that the special that day was Meatloaf.
yeah, on the menu.
How was it?
Yeah, I wonder what that was made of. So that would explain why that album was possibly in the charts for a very, very long time and made somebody a lot of money. Maybe not Meatloaf, but certainly somebody else. And... maybe they just went up there for the entertainment, and maybe that involved going down into the caves. Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, Hillary Clinton was certainly there. We saw her go in.
But, do you know, could
be a doppelganger. We don't know.
No, yeah, but this is the thing. It's so easy to make doubles when you only see them in two, 300 meters distance or inside limos.
We were about 20 meters away from the fence with the cars drove by. But, I mean, there was a back entrance to that place, and nobody was allowed around there.
Yeah.
There was only a few cars came in the front.
I spoke to Chip Tatum, and he said that he had been part of transporting people to top-secret meetings of this character. You know, and he said the normal agenda would just be to meet in, like, military bases where there's absolute total security, total control, and just fly them in at nighttime with these Night Stalker helicopters and so on. Nobody knows what's going on, you know, and in, out, nobody even noticed what happened. So this whole thing, I still don't think they were there.
You know it sounds to me like Fort Knox or Area 51. And what I mean by that is there's no gold in Fort Knox, and if they're concentrating that much press coverage about Area 51, then... it's probably someplace nearby, but not actually there. Because if it's top secret, it's top secret. And if they're letting you know about it, then that's just a decoy, you know.
Yeah. There were rumors going that that this group had actually met in the Crocodile Castle, which is it not far from Copenhagen, but that was where they actually met. I don't know, but that was the rumor.
Well, the rumour last year was that they met in a hotel down in London. I can't quite remember the name of it. We did get that rumour at the time, actually. Mark Anderson and a couple of us were going to go down there, but we didn't have enough people, enough transport to do it, or cameras, for that matter. So we didn't go, but that was the rumour last year. It was certainly not in the Grove Hotel. Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, I saw you.
I was practicing listening. I was being silent. If you take the word silent and change the letters around, you can create the word listen. Isn't that amazing?
Okay. Yeah. Well.
So what do you guys think as far as they're going to need another big event because too many people are waking up.
Yeah,
and in their own words, they've said if the masses or a significant amount of the masses were to wake up, they know they're in trouble. They will be arrested.
Well, I think that that comment by Brzezinski saying that there was an awakening, I think that was put out to mislead, to let people believe that there were more people actually waking up than there are. Because why would he have that filmed? And why would it be released at a private meeting?
Well, I would question, how come only within, like, since 2008 has all of a sudden, you know, as if the elite don't control YouTube? Come on.
I know.
So what I think they're doing is they want people like us on the air talking about this and that, you know, they literally put an illegal president in the White House. You don't think they can doctor a birth certificate to make it look official?
Of course.
So why would they put African American when it would say Negro back then?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I'm saying is they keep doing all these things, and I think, you know, they want a massive revolution into all the laws they keep passing. Oh, let's see if this will piss them off. No,
yeah.
That didn't work. Okay, well, let's squash some more of their rights. How about foreign troops on the street being able to supersede sheriffs and stuff, and just we'll grab anybody and hold them without rights. NDAA, let's see if this pisses them off. They want an uprising, you know. And I think they're gonna cause one. I think they're gonna stage a fake Bundy type deal.
Yeah, well, there's similar things going on over here in terms of what happened at the Bundy Ranch. But of course, people over here don't have guns. They're just basically throwing them off their land. And big private corporations have already got cozy contracts stitched up to develop that land prior to these people being thrown off.
Neil, I got a question. Is that over the wind turbine?
Well, that was it. Yeah, I mean, that's Paula Campbell.
Yes, she's
going to be on with us, right?
Yeah, I'm just discussing the day and time.
Yeah. That's one situation. I mean, there are many others. Whether it's getting thrown off of land or getting thrown out of houses, we have a person we know who's a friend of a friend of a friend has let us know that his company's been contracted to supply 6,000 bailiffs to go in and just throw people out of their homes.
Wow! Yeah.
Wow.
6,000.
Sorry about that, Ole. I'm looking at the chat room, and I had Skype down, and I didn't even realize that Ole wasn't here. He dropped off.
I can't get into the chat room at all anymore. I don't know why. It doesn't matter what I do. I had Alan here trying to sort it out today, but I just cannot get into the chat room.
Wow, you still can't?
No.
Wow.
What, you mean the Awake Radio chat room?
Yeah, I can't get in there at all. I can type it up on my computer. I can see it there, and then when I refresh it, it just disappears. Nobody can see it.
Wow,
so that's bizarre. Did you try creating another name or coming in as
an anon? Different email address, anon. I've tried all the different configurations, and nothing works. I've even tried it at the computer at work from a different IP address. Nothing.
Wow. Oh, you're kidding me. In other words, because I was going to say, I'll go in your computer with TeamViewer and I'll run some cleaner programs like Glary Utilities and ADW and different cleaning utilities to get rid of any cookies or things or anything that might be hampering you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I don't want to take up your show with all this techie talk.
Yeah, it's okay. Go ahead.
Get back to the conversation. Yeah. I mean, if you want to come and do me a computer tomorrow, that'd be great.
Sure.
Okay, so back
ahead,
to
Ole.
Well, I'm here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, Ole, the wax dummy and it's sweating in Memphis in the foyer and the sideburns are coming off and... I'm kidding. Go ahead.
When it comes to Elvis, I have absolutely no idea. It's not something I look into.
Yeah. There's no way he died August 16th. But that's another conspiracy.
That's another show.
That's another day. I'm just joking with you. Because Ed was teasing me. Go ahead.
Don't let me get the duct tape off.
All right,
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Now, one thing I think is really important, though, is that there's so much conflict within the truth movement. You know, people are like, is Alex Jones on our side or is he not? Is David Icke on our side or is he not? Within the 9/11, so many are sort of wrestling inside their own group instead of looking upon the real problem here, which has nothing to do with us. It's this this elite group, and I would say, why not focus on them instead of quarreling with each other?
Well, they set up the divide and conquer.
I know that, but let's not buy into it.
Oh, for sure.
But But that's also why I'm not part of a group. I'm not an activist. I'm not a demonstrator, protester, you name it. I'm just myself. But I just think it's so important to focus on them and not letting them get away with what they try to, and just put the spotlight right there and do everything you can to expose them.
Right, because 11, 12 years later, we're still arguing planes or no planes.
That's
when it's
exactly
pretty obviously that, you know, or nobody got blown up at Boston. And
in the meantime, while we're arguing
about San Diego,
they're
planning
more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, exactly my point.
Yeah, I mean, the planes or no planes arguments are relevant. They brought the buildings down deliberately one way or another. That's the fact.
They
lie. We know that.
Yeah,
and I mean, many of these there really are no brainers, you know, like the Pentagon, small hole, massive plane, the plane vaporized. I mean, if I came home and said, "Listen, darling, I lost our car. What happened to it? Well, I reversed into the wall and it vaporized." I mean, it's the same type of incredibly stupid explanation, but we're still discussing it.
Yeah, try getting away with that on your insurance claim form. Where'd your cargo? It vaporized.
Exactly. It vaporized due to high heat because of the fuel. I mean, come on, not even my 2-year-old would buy that. But we're still arguing about it. It's unreal.
Yeah. Here's a conundrum for anybody that believes the government's theory. If you think jet fuel can make steel columns in a building like that soften, weak, and then buckle or break on an angle.
That was designed. That building was designed to take a hit from a plane or something like that.
Well, then,
come on.
How come jet engines operate with that high temperature fuel? The average life of a jet is 30 to 50 years, commercial airliners. So, I mean, if jet fuel could disintegrate metal like that, well, then jet engines, you know, to an hour into the flight would melt. It's ludicrous.
So would your barbecue at home.
Right.
No, but there's so many of these conspiracies that there are actually no brainers when you look at them. Sirhan with Robert Kennedy. The closest he was like a meter from Robert Kennedy, right in front of him. So where was Robert Kennedy shot from? Straight from the front? No, from the back and to the right. How many shots were fired? Maybe, possibly about 13. How many bullets were in the gun of Sirhan? Well, how many could he load? 8. I mean, you don't have to be very clever to see, ooh, there might be another second shooter. And if there is a second shooter, then we have a conspiracy. So let's just move on and start looking into that instead of still looking, no, it was the Patsy. No, it was the Patsy. I'm sorry, guys, it was not. And he's still in jail, by the way, because of us being asleep. I mean, his whole life has been wasted in that jail just because the rest of us haven't been so asleep, so we haven't, so we've just accepted it. And there's so many of these different conspiracies. Many, many of them are no-brainers once you look into them. I mean, the evidence does not match up at all. So I've said
many times, these people are they're clever devils. So you got to ask yourself, you know, if you were going to assemble a bunch of people missing limbs to roll up in wheelchairs and sit in front of a library at the Boston Marathon. And their job is, okay, when the flash pod goes off, you know, you fall out of your wheelchair, someone will run away with the wheelchair, and you put the prosthesis on and put the fake blood all over the place, but don't forget to put the blood packets in your pocket, right? I mean, you would have instructions not to leave any evidence behind. And what do we have? We have pictures of people with blood packs taped to their body and left on the sidewalk. And the whole thing about this big hole in Pennsylvania with no luggage, no plane parts, no bodies, I would say to you that they do this on purpose to make it easy for the conspiracy detectives in us to find this evidence. And then when we say report the truth, it's so out there that there is now a division within the public that, you know, our own government couldn't have done this. You're crazy. Say that again, I'll kill you, you know. That's what people have said to me when I first started waking up. And I said, you know, of course George Bush had an idea and knew about it. Oh, our own president did this to his own people on 9/11. Say that again. I'll find out where you live and I'll, you know, they are being sloppy on purpose so that they can cause a division. What do you think?
Well, in terms of the Pennsylvania aircraft, which of course they made the movie about and made out that the passengers were all heroes and brought it down. You know, the whole thing stinks. I mean, it takes a long time to make a movie, but they seem to have that one out very quick. I just compared it to Lockerbie. I mean, I lived 30 miles from Lockerbie when that plane came down, and wow. I remember it vividly.
I remember being at work when I heard about it. Yeah, and claimed Gaddafi.
There was bodies and luggage and bits of aircraft over a wide, wide area, and there was a furrow in the ground, but it's where the aircraft hit it, and it just kept going. There was no black hole, there was no burning timber. There was a lot of demolished houses and everything around it. And as I say, luggage, suitcases, you know, bodies, you know, that's a plane crash.
Paper,
because everything.
Because a lot of the people are traveling business people, so they've got folders full of documents and stuff in their briefcases, and doesn't happen.
No, nothing.
By the way, nothing vaporizes, you know. In my travels of searching for the truth, there are links. I don't know if they're still there, but there were reports from Cleveland or Cincinnati. I can't remember right now that flight 93 landed. And it was instructed to taxi over to where there's a NASA facility at that particular airport. And then it sat there for 30 minutes surrounded by security. And then 200 people were disembarked and taken into that NASA facility. Now, I don't understand how 200 people could be on that plane when it wasn't even... Most of those planes weren't even scheduled to fly that day. And the towers, the people who work in air traffic control are pretty spot on. They've got the lives of thousands of people in their hands. If they say Flight 93 landed at a certain time and they ID'd the plane, and then a couple hours later the mayor of the town does a press conference and said, wait a second, what was first reported was wrong. It wasn't Flight 93. Well, I would say this. How come none of us in the Patriot Movement can get an interview with someone who was brought into that NASA facility where somebody would say, yeah, I was on the plane. It wasn't 93. It was 39. And yes, there were 200 people. We were debriefed, and then we left. What? And then I got, you know, after looking at that evidence, the next thought that crossed my mind is, what happened to those 200 people? I mean, were they actors? Were some of them real? Were they sacrificed at the Illuminati victory party for 9/11? You know, okay, did they put them on another plane and take them to a secret location? Can you imagine being told, hey, make some phone calls for us, tell them that you're on this plane and it's been hijacked, and this is a matter of national security, just do as you're told and you'll see your family again, don't worry about it, we have to do this. And then, you know, they're brought somewhere, and you're going to meet the President of the United States. And George Bush walks in with a devilish grin. And these poor people probably had no idea what was... I don't even want to go there on the radio, because there are some people who listen to this network who I don't... I don't even want to go to what was done to some of those people who disappeared, you know. It's alleged that a lot of them might have been CIA or actors, but we know nobody made any phone calls from Flight 93. Nobody fought back. It was all a lie.
I'd been on many planes around that time, and I never switched my phone off just to see if it would work, and it never did.
Right. They made quite a lot of the tests at that time. There was no way they could use mobile phones on that height. No. So that, once again, a no-brainer. You know, there's so many of these that just, that one just sinks the whole theory right there. Yeah. But
And then they were very clever enough to have Rumsfeld pretend to slip. Oh, the plane we shot down. So we all go, aha, you shot it down. But that was a lie also. You follow me?
Yeah, but even if they did shoot it down, they could say that was an act of self-defense. They had to shoot it down, blah, blah, blah.
But there was still no plane.
No, I know.
There was just a hole in the ground.
Right, yeah. And then they concocted the whole story then about the plane is this far out, it's that far out, and Dick Cheney says, did you hear me say the contrary? It's like, you know, when you realize that we have selections and not elections, well, then you got to know that because of Poppy Bush being, you know, one of the top dogs in this New World Order, that obviously it was going to be George Bush and not Al Gore. So basically these two clowns meet at the Bilderberg, right? And they're told, okay, you're going to be the president. And we're going to say, Al Gore, check this out. We got a great one. This is really going to divide the masses. We're going to have the news media report that Al Gore got the popular vote. So we're going to divide them along Republican and Democrat lines. And we're going to have George Bush pretend like he's for children. And he's going to appoint pro-life judges to overthrow Roe versus Wade. I mean, it's going to be awesome, man. We're going to have the American people at each other's throats for the next 4 years or possibly eight if George does a good job. So you're going to be the winner. We're going to say you really won, and then we're going to watch them all fight over the whole thing. If they're selected, this was all made up. And people are still arguing that George Bush stole the election. Wake up, people. There is no election.
We stole it from the people.
Yeah.
I'm
it's
gonna
brilliant.
I'm going to have to go. I'm not going to be able to do my show tonight either, because I've got something to come
up.
I've got to go and sort it out. But back on Thursday with Alan Watt for his monthly hour, as it were. So
awesome, yeah. Annie had wrote to him, so could you tell him that, could you give him my Skype, drop him my Skype contact, or does he call in on the phone?
Yeah, it's the phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you have to call him on the phone, yeah. I'm going to actually call him tomorrow, because the email address that I usually use has gone down, so and all my emails have been wiped. But it's a server problem, it's not my computer or anything, but there you go. So I've got to phone him tomorrow and just confirm Thursday, but I think he's all right.
Wow, so they're really after you, are they?
No. This is just that's a completely separate thing, no conspiracy theory, no. The guy that holds the server it's gone down and he's had to get a new one, so nothing conspiratorial.
Well, thank you for joining us.
No problem at all.
Do you have to go right this second?
More or less, yeah.
All right.
Always a pleasure, Neil.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to miss you today.
Well, these things can wait.
All right.
Okay.
All right, you take care. You want to say goodbye to Ole? Ole?
Yeah. Cheers, Ole. Nice to speak to you.
Cheers, Neil.
I had Alan Taylor Shearer down here today. We did a little promo video for Awake Radio TV, which we're going to be starting
at the
end of the month.
Mention that.
Yeah, well, that's up on the communitypressgroup.com website, the little promo video he did today. So
there you go, Ole. You go. So we'll be getting you on Awake TV soon.
We will, yeah. Definitely.
Let me know so I can go to the local grocery store and get a paper bag for my head.
Come on.
we'll talk about it later, but we want to get all the hosts together to do a promo anyway. So
okay. Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah.
Okay, no problem. I really go, lads.
All right,
okay,
thank you.
Have a good
thank
day.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks a lot. You too. Cheers.
Thanks.
Take care. Thanks, Willie.
Neil Boster of Reality Bites.
Seriously, I don't want to scare any new listeners.
Annie, you're a very pretty lady, and you don't even look half. You look half your age, so.
Go ahead, go on.
She looks like she's cuter than Linda Blair without the makeup on when Linda Blair was young doing, you know, Exorcist.
Oh, yeah, that's really a nice comparison. Thanks.
I was going to do her up for a Halloween party as Linda Blair because people said she looks like Linda Blair.
I was
going to
go the Kimmel soup. The pea soup, too, and everything.
Yeah, I was going to make her, like, this contraption she could carry around, like a little bed, and so she could put it down and kneel down and turn around so her head would spin. With, like, fake arms and legs in the bed covered up with a blanket, and she'd put the thing down and she could turn around in a circle.
All right, enough about me.
Okay.
Anyway.
Listen, if I can say one thing more about the Bilderberg meeting... You know, I think the police get a lot of bad rap, you know, and many times they really deserve it. I mean, there's so many police officers that are totally out of order. But I must say that when I came to Denmark and I saw the way that the police, I know that it was a special group of police that was sort of controlling this area, but and that special troop were sort of the friendly group of police officers. They were used as that, and they were extremely good at it. I mean, very nice people, I would say. And this thing, when I saw, you know, there was these images of a guy being arrested and pulled down the pavement, and it went out in media saying that the police had beaten him up and all these things. I was there when it happened. And this guy that they took care of was just, I don't want to say retarded, but he was a little... not really normal, and he kept pushing his camera. He pretended almost like being a journalist, and he kept pushing the camera up in the face of one of the InfoWars reporters. So that guy got a little irritated, and then these three police officers came up and said, "Please, can you move away?" And then they pushed him off, and he kept insisting on trying to push his way through, and then they dragged him off, which I thought was a mistake by them, but there was absolutely no beating, there was nothing from the police in that case. We were heavily guarded. I mean, there were all these weird kind of vehicles driving around with I don't know what the kind of technical stuff on them, and there were people on the roofs of the buildings, you know, with microphones and binoculars. I don't know what they were doing up there, But I think that I really gave them credit. But at the same time, I also really tried to inform them, because most of these people, I think, were not aware of who they were protecting. And I was almost arrested there the first evening. I don't know if I told you.
Yes, you did.
And that came out in a really nice way, because they wanted me to identify myself, and I refused, because... last time I was in Denmark, it wasn't a police state, but this was a kind. These officers were not brutal in any way. They were nice, honest people, but not understanding who they were protecting. So we had like a 10-minute dialogue where they insisted on me identifying myself, or I would be arrested. And the only thing I had done was walk down the street, so I absolutely refused. But at the end, it came to a point where he said, "Well, then I have to arrest you." And so I said to him, "Okay, Mr. Kind police officer, do you know, it is actually a bit of a waste of time, don't you think? You book me, you take me downtown, you will ask what is your name, I will refuse to tell it, then you will maybe put me in a cell overnight, give me a fine, and then maybe drive me back here, you know, depending on how kind you are. But what good will come out of that?" So when I said, "Let's make a deal. You promise me that you go home and you study this Bilderberg group, the group that you are protecting from people like myself, normal people who are the ones paying your tax, your wages through our taxes. So why are you protecting them from us when it should be the other way around. So he agreed, okay, I'll go home and do that, and if you tell me your name. So I told him my name, I gave him a false address and so on. And then afterward, at that same time, they were sort of surrounded by other people, you know, journalists, and they were wondering, what's going on? Why are you trying to arrest this guy? I mean, he did nothing. And then while they were occupied with that whole thing, I mean, they were there for, I think, almost half an hour trying to answer questions from the press and so on, so they got themselves in a bit of trouble, and I just walked off. So, but I saw several police officers, you know, standing with magazines from InfoWars, you know, I saw police officers in dialogue with some of the people there that were protesting the meeting, you know, where they were sort of getting more and more of an understanding of what was going on. So I thought that was a great thing, and you know, the whole thing ended. We cleaned the whole area where the Truth Movement had been, shook hands with the police, and it ended in a really nice way, I think. Because it's only by these, the police and the military are the key people, and also staff of the FEMA camps and so on, key people in this awakening thing. They need to wake up because they're the ones protecting this small group, very, very dark and sinister group, from the rest of us. So it seems super important that they become aware of what's going on, I think.
Yeah, if I might offer my take on this whole police brutality thing. The United States is a very big country. We have many counties and cities. I would say to you that the media focusing on police brutality on any given day, I'm not saying that. I mean, I've met some crooked ones and some ones that get off on beating people up and pushing people around. I've been on the receiving end. But I've also met some really nice ones who said, we ain't taking the guns and we know what's going on and we're not giving up our sovereignty. So what I would like to ask you, as far as your opinion goes, knowing that they like to divide and conquer and set up hate schemes and demonize certain groups, I would say that whenever police officers get out of line and go overboard, this stuff gets pushed on purpose so that the public will garnish a hatred for the police, so that at some point the people will gun down the police during a big...
Out of fear, because yeah. When you see those blues go behind you, you automatically are put in fear.
Right. It's a fear mindset. They want the people to fear the police and the police to fear the people, because that would be the perfect powder keg when they begin this martial law type thing. And that would be a reason, okay, well, we got to bring in the troops now because the police have lost control and they're being picked off left and right. And I think they're getting us ready and gearing us up for this sort of thing. Because, as I said, with all the police officers across the United States alone, if this was really an epidemic... then all you would see all day long on the news is, in this city, these cops did this. In this city, these cops did this. In this city, but it's not like that. I mean, for the millions of cops all around the United States, you know, we only hear about these certain incidents. And they, for the most part, I would say they're isolated. Most of the cops are decent. And you got a few that are just bullies and they abuse their authority and they you know, they think they're above the law. But I think we're being set up so that the public and the police will be divided. When the time comes when we should be united, instead of us uniting together against foreign troops, they want the public to start shooting police officers, you know? So I would caution against that. I would start talking to your police department and your police officers and buy them a cup of coffee and you know, talk just a little bit. Don't say too much, but, you know, say, do you understand what's about to take place as far as the financial collapse and the sovereignty of the United States, global government? Does any of this make sense to you? Are you aware of what's about to go down? And I think most of the police I talk to, they say, yes, we are. Go ahead.
No, I think what you're saying is absolutely super important and beautiful as well. And this is, you know, I never promote violence or revenge or hate or anything like that. I come from a totally different angle. I do promote total bravery, total transparency, total courage when it comes to exposing these people, but in total non-violence.
I shake their hand and I thank them for serving, and I tell them when it all goes down, we'll have your back. And he's like, I wish more citizens were like you.
Exactly. And you know, when we came to the Bilderberg meeting, the first day there were people in bulletproof vests and so on. When we left, there were no bulletproof vests. There were stickers with the word love in Danish on the back, and you know, they were hugging. My first speech I gave, there were 40 people that gathered around me and gave me a group hug just outside the Marriott Hotel, just when I, you know, the whole thing just diffused into a beautiful atmosphere from this dark and sinister thing. And afterwards I spoke to the police, some of the police, the riot police and so on, and they said, my God, when we came here we really feared you, and now we got new friends. And I think this is the way to do it, you know, to win over the police and the military forces on our side by caring, you know, all of these beautiful ethics, instead of, if we try and hit back with violence and these things, they will squash us. They will use it as an excuse to just hit back multifold. So that is not the way to go. So I think, just like you say, when you see an officer, that an honest, decent officer, do not pay him your respect, you know, really say, my God, it's wonderful to see someone like you who stand up for what is right and true and protect us, you know. It feels great to have someone like you. And then let that spread, you know. And then the bad eggs, okay, expose them spot on, you know, fearlessly. When they're out of order, expose them right on, but really take care of the good ones, you know, because many of these people also, I think, in their jobs, are sometimes afraid of standing up because the pressure might be very hard on them to stand in line and do all of these orders they might be given that are strictly against why the whole thing that they swore loyalty to, you know, the whole,
it's what do like, you call it, the whole, it's like doctors, it's a club, and you know, they don't want to get Serpico'd. I'd like to get him on the show sometime. In other words, listen, if you're in a corrupt police department like Los Angeles or someplace, you stand up and start talking about the corruption going on, you're going to be called to the scene of a 211 robbery, and your backup isn't there, and, you know, you're going to be probably shot by your own fellow officers, and then they'll put a throwdown weapon and shoot a patsy and say he shot you. It's a dangerous situation, and I know many police officers who quit because they didn't like how we went from, you know, the serve and protect friendly police of television in the old days, yeah, to the SWAT teams of today, you know. And I mean, go ahead.
No, but I mean, what happened? The peacekeeping officer, and then suddenly we had Robocops. I mean, what happened? You know? So it really, there must have been a shock for many honest police officers as well to suddenly find themselves in a situation where they had to when somebody's giving you an order, you have to follow it, and then suddenly you're forced to do all these horrific things against the population. And so I think many of them are in a very difficult situation, and that makes it even more important for us to welcome the ones that are really brave and honest and support them in trying to stand up, you know.
Yeah, well, to me, to me, there are two groups of people that, without them, currently, okay, I mean, I don't believe in government. I understand that it's evil and it steals from the people, and I think we'd be better off if we policed ourselves and all that, but currently, where we're at right now, because of the poverty state that has been artificially created, without truckers and police officers, all hell will break loose. And I've been telling truckers and police officers, you being out there on the streets doing your job is why we can go to the grocery store and we don't have to fear being killed or mugged or raped every time we step out of our house, even though they try to paint that picture on the news and keep you in a state of fear all the time. Most people can go to the store and buy their food and come back home. And if, you know, when the truckers don't go to work and the police officers stay home to protect their own family, there's going to be many people that are going to take advantage of that situation, like what we saw down in New Orleans with the looting and stuff like that. And then, you know, once the windows are smashed out on every pharmacy, every liquor store, every grocery store, every Walmart, and there's no merchandise in there, and truckers are afraid to deliver goods because they're getting hijacked for their cargo, they're not going to be restocking them stores, I'm sorry. I mean, I hope you've got a garden and some chickens or something, because, I mean, we really need to support the truckers and the police. Because once that chaos breaks out, you know they're going to bring in troops to patrol the streets, and then it'll be like, stay in your homes, remain calm, you know. Do not ask questions. You are now under martial law. Anyone caught outside after curfew will be shot, you know, like that Dead Kennedy song. And I don't want to live in a country like that, but I see that's all part of the plan, you know. And they've got both. So, if we can't...
Do you know the meaning of the word government?
Yeah, mind control.
It means government, mind control. It's exactly that word. And it's incredible when you listen to it and you see what's going on. So it's spot on.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to bring in Alan Taylor Shearer. You did a segment with him last week. Can you stick around a few more minutes to talk to Alan?
For sure. I would love to.
Awesome. You're listening to Shake and Wake with Rick and Annie on the Awake Broadcasting United Networks. We'll be right back. Our guest is Ole Damigar. We'll be right back with Alan Taylor Shearer.
Oh, evolution of the revolution of consciousness begins here at Awake Radio.
You're listening to Awake Radio, straight talk for the awake and aware.
See what sending out them negative waves did, Moriarty?
But Oddball, I did try and tell them, but they won't listen. I tried.
Sure.
But I did. I did try.
Oh, man. Don't hit me with them negative waves so early in the morning.
But I can't force them to listen. I can't.
Always with the negative waves, Moriarty. Always with the negative waves. Have a little faith, baby. Have a little faith.
But I keep trying. Oddball, I keep trying. But they won't listen. They won't tune in. They really won't.
Why don't you knock it off with them negative waves? Why don't you dig how beautiful it is out here? Why don't you say something righteous and hopeful for a change?
Tune in to Awake Radio for your positive waves.
You're listening to awakeradio.co.uk, awakeradio.us, and shazizradio.com. Awake Radio, straight talk for the awake and the aware.
Welcome back to Shake and Wake with Rick and Annie on the Awake United Broadcasting System. And on behalf of Ole, I would ask you to go to his site, check out his books that he's selling, and if you can, buy a book or make a donation. That's lightonconspiracies.com. Help a brother out because he got attacked. And he can really use the help for all the work that he's been doing throughout the years.
Wow, well said. And I like that. You said that better than I would have. You're getting better and better at this.
That was off the top of my head.
Soon you won't need me anymore. And then I can sleep late.
Don't be giving me any ideas.
We'll get Rick, Mr. Right Now, Ritnor, to take my place. So you don't even have to change the name. You just drop the K. It'll be Shake and Wake with Rick and Annie, R-I-C, you know?
Yeah, don't give me any ideas.
I mean, you don't have to be in the same place to do the show, you know?
No, yeah, that's true.
I mean, you could even dump me in the river and Rick could probably move in down here. He'd probably like it over here.
I might know this stuff down there now, so.
I shouldn't be giving her ideas. We are joined. Our guest today is Ole Damagard. I almost said Damagard because of the way it's spelled with an A, but it's pronounced Damagard. We're also joined by Alan Taylor Shearer, the voice of 1800 Online Live. Up next, every day after Shake and Wake, on the Awake Broadcast, Awake United Broadcasting System.
Welcome, A-W-A-K-E, Alan. 106.2. Bumping out on the AM.
Yeah, and the answer to 1984 is 1995.
Plus tax.
Plus tax.
Tax.
Brass yeah, and shipping. Hey, we were discussing how most police officers probably, they want a job with security and a pension, and they're probably not all bullies, and that the New World Order people would like to cause the public to be afraid of the police and the police to be afraid of the public, so that mm-hmm. when something goes down, instead of us all working together to fight together, that we'll all divide up into our little groups. And, you know, the same thing goes with the Mexicans and the blacks and you know, I think that their idea is just like kill the power or create a disaster of some sort and sit back and watch us kill each other for a couple months and then send in the troops to round up the stragglers.
Well, we see that kind of scenario all the time on British television where UK British troops have been put out on the streets in cases of extreme emergency, both in dramas and well, I say serious drama and less serious drama as well. Now, a program that you might be interested in checking out, I don't know if you know it, is called Torchwood. If you ever get a chance to check out Torchwood, whilst it's a spin-off of the Doctor Who series, okay, there's also some very, very interesting scenarios and some very interesting clues as to possible future scenarios, which we hope and pray never come about. But I found some of the imagery and some of the storylines that are covered in that show absolutely fascinating and very relevant to what we talk about. So that's something to check out on YouTube, or if you have access to BBC America or something like that. It's a BBC program anyway, and whilst I don't want to be promoting that organization of criminals, this particular piece of drama I think is very relevant to spelling out some possible scenarios for the future. However, that said, my greetings to Ole, and hopefully I will have you on later this week and we can talk for a couple of hours about events at Bilderberg, etc.
I would be the most happy to do that.
Excellent.
And can I just say, and then also thank you once again to you as well for acting so fast, you know, when it came to spreading out the info, mm-hmm. helping to diffuse this possible massacre. I think.
Ole, you're really low. Could you speak a little more into the mic? You went really low. Okay, thanks.
No, I just wanted to thank Alan as well for being so fast when it came to spreading out the info about a possible false flag operation in Copenhagen, because I think if that was the case, then you might have been part of defusing a massacre in Copenhagen. So I really, really thank both of you, or all of you, for helping to do that.
Oh, very much appreciate pleasure. That. Yeah. I did a video that went along with some of the stuff that I'd recorded, and hopefully that went some way to defuse it. Yeah. For my part, coming up in around 10 minutes, I will be bringing you Monday Music, a little oasis in the madness of this real world, a little oasis of peace and calm. And tonight's theme is Latin America. We go south of the border because there's football. The World Cup is starting later on, and this country is completely wrapped up in soccer, I suppose it's called. And I personally am not, but I felt that some of those Latin American sounds might just ease us into the week. So that's going to be the theme this evening, Latin America. And I have to say, all the tunes were chosen by my youngest son. So he's going into he's going to be going into radio production, it seems, because he's home educated and he's an aspiring video editor, cameraman, producer, director, and now radio engineer and producer as well. So
put him to work.
That's an opportunity that you wouldn't have got in any mainstream school.
Put him to work for Awake TV as an intern. And Awake Radio, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because that's where I was today. I was down at the community press group just in North London, and ended up making a promotional video for Awake TV, which I wasn't expecting to do, or I would have dressed better. But but that aside, the video was made. Cool. I edited it, uploaded it. It's there on YouTube on the Community Press Group channel.
Awesome.
Ole is an excellent guest. He can discuss any conspiracy. The guy's got more knowledge.
He's incredible.
Like I said, if he was older, I would question whether he was actually there and in on it.
No, he was a great find, definitely.
Yeah, very.
You're definitely going to have to be a guest on Awake TV, Ole. It's going to be once a month, and it'll be released on the first Wednesday of each month. So we hope that you will be a part of it right from the very start.
I tell you, Alan, like I always say, anything I can do to make a difference for the better, I'm right there, right there.
Thank you. And there's also a request to host Rick and Annie. We need a short 5-minute video of you talking about what you do, how you came about, and try and squeeze your story into 5 minutes if you can, maybe 10 minutes, so that we can put it in a video that we want to put together of all the hosts on Awake Radio, just saying their part about what they do, and putting it out there to be part of the launch of Awake TV.
Cool. We'll set up Annie's coffee IV and stuff, and
and the paper and the paper bag.
We'll play the beginning of Mother Freedom, and you can see her playing air drums, and then step up on her chair and going, "Thank you, Florida," throwing a drumstick.
Beautiful. Okay, guys, right. I'm gonna head off and just do the last minute prep before I go on air. And I will speak to you again in just over 5 minutes' time. Thank you very much, and take care, Ole.
You too, Alan. You too.
Thanks, Rick and Annie. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So stay tuned. 1800 Online Live.
The Voice.
The Voice. Alan Taylor Shearer is up next in a few minutes. I really can't thank you enough for all the times that you've been on with us, Ole. You are one of the most soft-spoken, kind-hearted, gentle
people. And I am so glad that we found one another. You're a friend.
Given positive information. The only person I know who's more soft-spoken than you is Max Egan, you know. Max is, are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're invited as speakers to the same thing in Denmark this fall in September.
And
it's
called
the Open Mind Conference, and it was so strange because he was coming here to Spain to visit a friend of mine just a few kilometers from here, just up in the mountains, and I was so sad that I wouldn't be able to meet him. And then it turned out that 2 weeks later. Because I was going to be in Sweden at that time, but 2 weeks later we were going to meet in this place in Copenhagen. So God's ways are mysterious.
Very.
Yeah, Max lives very humbly, and
me known him for how long? 6 years, going on
about,
seven.
We knew him from. We'll put it this way: he got his start on radio on the network that we used to be on, you know, and. After listening to people yell and scream and get excited, not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, one of my favorite hosts that does a show on here, I would say he's the best yeller and screamer I ever heard because he's making sense, you know. And I'll plug him right now. Whenever I hear him on, I'm sitting there saying, yep, yep. Yep, and he gets me fired up too. And I you know, most people pull back when they hear somebody getting upset or speaking loudly. But Roger Landry, you can tell it's his passion, and I would have to say he's one of the few people that can get that upset and not come off like a nut job. and I think what he's saying and the bizarreness of this whole thing and how the public, for the majority of the public, hasn't woken up to all this yet. And his style is something that when I'm hearing him, he is venting what I would like to say, you know. I mean, the guy will be on the air saying, like, if you don't believe what I'm telling you, look it up. Do your research. I can't make this stuff up, okay? And, you know, it's kind of like an outlet, you know what I mean? He's doing the yelling and screaming so that I can come on here and laugh and joke and be a wise guy, you know?
Yep.
I don't like Alex Jones yelling and screaming like a nut job. I think he makes us look bad. But as far as ranters go, Roger Landry is my favorite ranter, you know. It'd be tough to beat him because he gives you a lot of facts, and he's constantly telling you, do your research. I just wanted to mention that after listening to people all excited and afraid or pushing fear and getting upset and angry or making people feel like there's no hope, which we never want to do. We want to show people we're fearless and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. We have faith in the Creator. We are one. We try to laugh and joke. And Max Egan, or a voice like you that is very calm and steady, it's a nice change now and then in between all the other different hosts. I think everybody has their own style. Nobody should try to be anybody else. And I really appreciate people like you and Max Egan because, you know, when I'm listening to you or Max talk, it puts me more in that mindset of hope and, you know, I'm not ready to go outside and start breaking things or, you know... Because this stuff will drive you crazy, you know what I mean? It will drive you crazy if you're not grounded in the fact that we are one. And we are doing a beautiful thing, rising together, showing what we're made out of.
That's this is the whole part. Thing. I think thank you for your warm words. I just want to say, if it's not to spread hope, I would just shut up. You know, if I would just be one that spread fear and doubt and depression around me by shooting out facts, you know, facts, but in a depressing way, I would be better silent. You know, my task is there to see, to try and live by example, to stand for what is true and right, even though I'm under fire, but in kindness, in beauty, in honesty, in truth, and then expose these groups of people that are they've got a very sick mind. I would say I don't judge the sinner. I judge the sin. You know, their minds are very sick, and so we need to transcend the whole thing. And in one very strange way, they're actually helping us to wake up, because without them burning the torch under our butts, we might be asleep for another 100 years, you know. So
right, and we wouldn't be coming together. None of us would be friends. We're going to be friends for eternity after this.
I know. It's amazing. It is amazing.
So is it really so horrible, you know? If death isn't final, then whatever's going to happen, the important thing is standing up and being a light for the truth and everything. And we're down to the last minute, and we're going to play our outro. I just want to thank you once again for all your work, and we are working on our new website. I'm going to put links up to your site as well, you know, because I want to see, everybody deserves a little help now and then.
So go to his site, Light on Conspiracies, and if you can, make a donation, please.
Thank you so much, Annie. It's extremely appreciated, because what many listeners might not know, but people that stand up for truth are hit hard, you know. So it's to keep the balance, it makes a massive difference to get a bit of a support, you know.
All right, thanks.
Very appreciated.
Thank you so much.
Most welcome, anytime.
Thank you. You're awesome, man. We can't wait to have you back. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
All right. And thanks to all the listeners and all the cool people, Steve and Paula. We love you guys. We're running late again, Annie. So go ahead. 2 seconds.
Bomba-dee-da, 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 bomba-dee